Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
That's about all I can muster right now. End of the episode. All right. Good night, everybody.
That was our analysis.
that was about as good as of analysis as we can really get into. I'm just going to start in right in on the Bears. I feel like that's where most people,
you know, we're sponsored by the Rockford Ice Hogs. We don't have to go into that spiel.
We are sponsored Rockford Ice Hogs. Get with your tickets, icehogs.com, blah, blah, blah. Don't hate us. So I'm just going to start off by saying that I still have some Kool-Aid packets in my cabinet, but I drop kicked the whole pitcher down my block.
I could just see you with a giant pitcher of Kool-Aid just fumbling it on the stairs and watching it splash everywhere.
And I broke the wooden spoon, the clink, clink, clink spoon over my knee like Bo Jackson over it with a bat.
Oh, no. Oh, that's rough.
That game started off well.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the defense come out there and just absolutely shut down the Packers offense.
Yeah, Roy Robertson Harris was going off, and Rodgers looked completely just shook.
Yeah, Tommy Harris was collapsing the line. Roy Robertson Harris was getting pressure. Khalil Mack would have gotten all kinds of pressure. He got a lot of pressure, but he would have gotten all kinds of pressure if they would have actually called holding.
Yeah, that did not happen at all.
Yeah, when you have media people who don't like the Bears saying that, dang, he was really getting held like crazy, you know, that's saying something.
Yeah, it really is.
So we're like, all right, this is great, you know? And then the Bears offense, Mitch Trubisky just went out to, you know, 50-yard line right in the middle and just took a giant steaming poop.
To say the least.
And I'm not putting this all on Mitch. This is not all on Mitch. Mitch played a terrible game.
Mm-hmm.
But Matt Nagy called an awful game.
Yes, he did.
The offensive line looked like doo-doo.
It was awful. Couldn't block anything.
And Mitch looked like a rookie in his first game.
Yeah, and that's something I wanted to bring up. If this was Mitch Trubisky's first career start, you and I would probably be more understanding, yes?
Absolutely.
But it wasn't. This was his second opening day start and his third year as a professional.
And second year in this system.
Under Matt Nagy. But you're absolutely right. It wasn't all his fault, though he was bad. Very, very bad. I mean, if you want to look at probably the biggest problems I had, I mean, you're throwing into coverage. That's one thing. You're staring down receivers. So, I mean, the Green Bay defense was reading him like a comic book. And it was just a giant mess. Now, I understand that having linemen right in your face makes things difficult, but when you did have time to throw, the throws were not accurate. They were not smart decisions. And you know what? You got to give a lot of credit to Allen Robinson for having quite a good game. I mean, wouldn't you say he had a very good game?
Allen Robinson is the only guy that came out to play on that offensive unit.
I'd argue there was one other guy, but he was by far the brightest spot. You know the other guy I'm thinking of. And it's not his fault that he didn't play in the second half, really. You know who I'm talking about.
David Montgomery?
Yes.
Yeah, I will agree. He just didn't touch the ball enough. It's really frustrating. So Mitch, you're right. He's staring receivers down. He's not throwing good deep balls. And he's not using, I don't want Mitch to run all the time. I don't want him to be a running quarterback.
No,
but you know what is, if there's a lane, take it. That's part of what your best skill set was last year, is you kept the defense honest by using your legs.
There was, I can't remember exactly when it was. I didn't go back and watch the tape. I just couldn't. I was too just blah by the whole thing. He threw to Allen Robinson. It was incomplete, but I think he was moving to his right, and there was a massive lane right in front of him, nothing but grass. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yep. And I don't know if you saw it going around on Twitter. It was a picture of a wide open guy in the end zone with waving his arms and saying, this wasn't a touchdown pass. And it was going around Friday morning on Twitter.
Yes.
And it was driving me crazy because I was like, well, that guy in the end zone waving his arms was Trey Burton, who didn't play in this game. That was from last year's opening game.
Right.
I was like, it's like, you know what? The guy stunk on ice. So at least if you're going to call him out, there's plenty of things to make fun of him about or get on his case about. But bringing up something from a year prior, that's lazy.
In a situation, you look at that picture. I think that picture was a little deceiving because the defender was coming across.
The defender did later say that he wishes he would have thrown it because it would have got intercepted.
Uh-huh.
But still, there was so many bad plays, standing in the pocket too long, not getting rid of the ball fast enough, staring down receivers. And I've mentioned it before, is that anytime a player leaves the Bears or the Chicago sports team, as soon as they come back and play them, they have a magical game. And Adrian Amos gets that interception that pretty much ends the game.
I turned it off as soon as that happened. I was done.
Yeah, I was just absolutely livid. I just, anybody else, it was so infuriating. I didn't know what to do. You know, that was a poor decision. It wasn't a badly thrown ball. It was just a bad decision.
Yeah, it was a very bad decision. It's not like Amos made a great play. That ball was asking to be picked.
Yeah, you just can't throw that ball.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, and I'm sure we'll get back to Mitch again, but remember first and 40? How does that happen?
I don't know, but the offensive pass interference on that ball that was caught, that would have been, what, like a first and goal or right around the 10-yard line? That was so ticky-tack.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you remember.
Yeah, I do.
It was so ticky-tack. And if I'm the official that threw that flag, I'm embarrassed for my job performance. That's embarrassing.
There were a lot of missed calls on both sides in that game. It was pretty crazy. There were a lot of missed calls. It was bad all around. But, you know, one of the things is the Bears played very undisciplined football in that game. I mean, you can agree with that, right?
Absolutely.
And I mean, unfortunately, when you play undisciplined football, well, you know, that kind of stuff, whether it's a good call or not, is going to happen. It's going to happen to you more. And you're just setting yourself up for failure by doing that.
Oh, fully agreed. This was such a tight game. I mean, this game basically came down to two passes. And, unfortunately, the Bears came out on the losing side of it. And you know, there was so much blame to go around, and absolutely zero of it goes on the defense.
No. Yeah.
Look at this. You had, by actual running backs, so of the running backs, the four running backs on your roster, do you know how many rushing attempts they got between those four running backs?
Yikes.
11.
Yikes.
And then there was the third and one play, and they had the slow-moving handoff to Cordarrelle Patterson.
What was that? And then Matt Nagy said even Walter Payton wouldn't have gotten through that. Like, what? Be quiet.
I don't understand. It's like Matt Nagy hates running the ball. He talked about it all last season. I need to be better about being committed to the run game. And as soon as he gets an opportunity, he's like, well, F the run. I'm done with it.
Yeah, I don't get it. He's like the anti-John Fox. John Fox, who was run. And now with Nagy, it's pass. Dave Montgomery was bouncing off guys, fighting for first downs in the first half. I was really excited to watch him. And then he's just gone in the second half. He's just gone. He didn't really use Tariq Cohen. How many times did they use Mike Davis? Barely.
Tariq Cohen got zero carries. Mike Davis got 5 carries. David Montgomery got 6. Cordarrelle Patterson got 1. And Trubisky rushed 3 times. And that's disgusting in a game where you scored 3 points. And the receivers, other than Allen Robinson, dropped a lot of passes. Last year, you didn't see very many drop passes from the Bears. I think they were a top 3 or top 5 team in least amount of drop passes. And there was several drops this game that were just frustrating. So it was all around. And the offensive line, I think it started with the offensive line. I'm not taking anything away from the Green Bay Packers. They had a really good defensive plan for the Bears. They went out in the offseason and spent a ton of money, way overpaid, to build that defense back up. And they came out to play. They added edge rushers. They added guys that can collapse the pocket. They added some playmakers there. They added some safeties. And they played a good game. And it started with getting pressure on Mitch Trubisky. And guys that normally don't give up pressures were giving up pressures. And I felt like that was the first sign of, man, wouldn't it have been nice to have them play a little bit in the preseason? Because the offensive line play they play as a unit. You go out there and you play as a unit. And it's not a bunch of guys playing by themselves. You could put 5 Pro Bowlers out there, but if you put them out there without any sort of play together, they're not going to have a great game, because it's a team effort. It's a unit. and these guys haven't played together in however many months. And Cody Whitehair, who's rock solid, gave up some pressures. James Daniels had some penalties and gave up some pressures. You saw guys that were very good last year not play very well. And I think that is where a lot of it started. I mean, Mitch Short, and he needs to get better, but if he's getting sacked five times, then guess what? He probably doesn't have the time to do the right things.
Right. I mean, everything was out of sync. Every single thing about that offense was out of sync. Up and down. It's like it was watching game one of the preseason. That's really what it felt like.
I'm going to tell you what is, I honest to God think that Matt Nagy had a game plan, 100% game plan that was going to be focused on Trey Burton for this game. And he fully expected Trey Burton to be in this game. And when Trey Burton was a game time decision that it was a no-go, that he panicked and had to throw the whole playbook out of the window and do something different. I honest to God think that's what happened.
Interesting.
And not saying that they were just going to go to Trey Burton every time. What I'm saying is I think that the plans were going to center around getting mismatches through Trey Burton and then using that to set up everything else that they wanted to do. And when Trey Burton didn't come or didn't play, and you had completely changed the whole plan of what you're doing, you ended up with an offensive line that was getting giving up pressures, a quarterback that just he's not throwing to moving targets. He's throwing to guys that are doing curl routes. He's throwing to guys that no yards after the catch. It's just really frustrating to watch that play. Like if that is the truth, that the whole scheme of what they were trying to do went out the window when Trey Burton couldn't play, then shame on Matt Nagy, because he should have had a game plan for a guy that was questionable all week. If he couldn't make it.
Well, if you're that frazzled by not having a tight end in the game, then there's something kind of wrong there, in my opinion. If Trey Burton is one of the big X factors in your game plan, granted, Trey Burton, I think, is a valuable piece to this offense, but really? I mean, I get what you're saying. I'm not saying you're wrong, but if that really is the case, then yeah, there's something very serious we have to talk about there.
I mean, the way the offense is, one of the key cogs is Philadelphia runs a similar style offense, and who is not saying he's their best guy but the guy that he's kind of the engine that keeps things moving. It's Zach Ertz, and that he's a very important piece to make that engine go. When you look at the architect of this offense, you've got the Kansas City Chiefs. Who's the engine that makes that motor go? It's Travis Kelce. And you saw what happened when, he couldn't play in the playoff game when Matt Nagy's last game coaching for Kansas City Chiefs. When he went out in that game, the Kansas City offense absolutely shut down.
Yep.
And so not saying that he's the key piece, it's just the cog, because when, he creates mismatches that allow you to keep moving the ball. And, if it allows you to, keep the defense honest so you can keep running the ball, and it allows single coverage without somebody underneath for the wide receivers so you can throw these, quick pass routes without somebody there trying to bat it down. So it does a lot of things. It spaces the field differently because you've got a bunch of tight ends that can't be Trey Burton.
Speaking of tight ends, just other tight ends on the team. How do I put this delicately? I
stink.
Yeah. I'm not sure Adam Shaheen is the guy that Ryan Pace thought he was going to be. Part of it could be injuries to blame, but didn't look good.
No, and I don't think he runs as well as we had hoped. And do I think he's a bust? Maybe considering where they drafted him. I still think you can use him as a weapon, but I think he's going to have to be like a red zone target where you use his height.
I agree.
And body size. Look at the one touchdown in that game. It wasn't a bad coverage. It was a defensive back who just got boxed out by Jimmy Graham. And he was right there. Jimmy Graham boxed him out like it was Charles Barkley going for a rebound. Boxed him out, created the space, and the defensive back couldn't get around fast enough around his body. And I feel like that is going to be the one thing that Adam Shaheen can do.
We've seen him catch some nice touchdown passes in his career in the brief time he's played. I definitely agree. Do I think he's a target downfield? Not in the end zone? Right now, I don't.
No, not at all. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he's not on this team next year. Because I think that's going to be a focus in the offseason is beefing up that tight end roster.
And I guarantee you they're going to draft somebody.
And I really do think Trey Burton is very good. We just got to get him healthy.
Yeah. We got to get him healthy. We got to get that potential coming because we saw some nice moments from Trey Burton last year. Did we see as many as we wanted to? No, but he had a really nice game in Minnesota in week 17. That's the kind of thing you want to see from Trey Burton. That's the kind of game you want to see from him. Obviously, he's got to get healthy first, but it shouldn't have been an excuse to lose, but not having him certainly didn't help.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really think that he creates a lot of the spacing that they helped create a lot of the spacing they want with their offensive players. Helps create single coverage, helps get mismatches. I think that's part of the key of having him, and that's why they spent so much money to get him. And I really think that's what screwed up the offensive game plan. Do I think that this is going to be a good offense? I think they have a very good possibility because there's a lot of weapons. The offensive line should be a whole lot better. Mitch Trubisky needs to be a whole lot better. And there's just there's too many offensive weapons. So I think they will. I think it's just going to take several weeks before they find their rhythm. And I think it'll happen sooner if we see Trey Burton come back healthy.
Am I right to be worried about this game in Denver, considering the altitude, considering Vic Fangio knows this team, considering that the Broncos still have a pretty respectable defense? I mean, if you want my opinion, if the Bears are going to score in Denver, it's probably going to be because they're picking off Joe Flacco.
Am I worried about the game? No. Do I think they can lose the game? Oh, absolutely. I'm not worried is because I don't fear their offense, especially against our defense.
No, I don't either. I think the defense should suffocate, but
it's going to be, and they don't have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers who can, you know, even get them that one drive. But it's going to be, can the offensive line improve a lot? Because those edge rushers in Denver are going to, if they don't, if they play like they did last or this week, they will get eaten alive and Mitch is going to get sacked all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm worried.
That's my concern. And honestly, is Matt Nagy has to out coach Vic Fangio.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about Chuck Pagano out coaching the offensive coordinator of the Denver Broncos. I'm not worried about that at all.
I don't think anybody is.
Matt Nagy needs to outcoach Vic Fangio. Has to. Absolutely has to. He's got to go, hey, you know what? I know Vic Fangio. I know what he's trying to do. I know how he does it. And he better scheme to beat that pressure. He better scheme to give Mitch Trubisky more time. He better scheme to get passes out quicker and limit the decisions that Mitch Trubisky has to make. A lot of rollouts, things like that. That's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to screen, have a lot of screen passes ready. Tariq Cohen better get a big chunk of touches in this game.
Oh, if there is a golden opportunity to really use the run to your advantage, wouldn't you think it would be in Denver? Wouldn't
you
think?
And here's the thing too, is how do you slow down the pass rush? Is you let your offensive line do their thing. Let them pound away at the defensive line and run the ball. Even if you're not getting a ton of yards per carry, pound the ball and wear down that defensive line. Make those edge rushers run.
That's the best way to put it. The other thing that worries me a lot is this isn't really that relevant. Just historically, it feels like the Bears have never, ever had success against Denver, no matter what year it is.
Yeah, I'm not confident about the game until the offense can come out and show that they can do something. But I think the defense is absolutely going to keep us in this game.
Oh, of course.
Can the special teams do something? And I was really hoping in the game against Green Bay that we would be able to get a special teams, some kind of plus special teams play. And, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson never got to return one.
No, he didn't. No, he did. The only time I remember seeing Cordarrelle Patterson was on that awful run play.
I think he got a catch too. He got one catch for 3 yards.
I don't remember. I just remember seeing Allen Robinson make catches. That's about it, honestly.
Yeah. So it's, I'm not worried about the Bears being able to stop the offense of Denver, because the defense, for everybody that said the defense was going to take a step back because they lost Vic Fangio, I think the defense might have even gotten a little better.
The defense was incredible the other night. You limit Rodgers to 10 points. And the fact that you lost that game, you should be winning a game you limit Aaron Rodgers to 10 points, 10 times out of 10.
200 yards passing and 10 points. Absolutely, you should be winning that. And when David Bakhtiari gives up, has more penalties called against him than he did all of last year, and I think he gave up as many sacks this game than he did all of last year, and that's one of the best left tackles in the game, and you just manhandle that guy? Okay. I mean, I honestly think you got better.
Well, yeah. I mean, you said before that Chuck Pagano is much more aggressive, and we said last year that as much as we liked Vic Fangio, we kind of didn't like how he stopped being aggressive at times, and games maybe got a little closer than they should have been. So I think that Chuck Pagano's style of defense fits very well with the players on this team, especially when you have a Hicks, a Mack, you know, those type of guys. And also a Roquan Smith, who we saw why he was taken in the first round a year or so ago. He looked good. Roy Robertson Harris looked good. I mean, we mentioned Khalil Mack. That front seven looked incredible. Absolutely incredible. And nothing would be more shame than seeing this defense go to waste.
My favorite part of this whole game was we saw Leonard Floyd do what we've been waiting for him to do. And he brought it. He looked fantastic.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
I couldn't have asked for a better game from him. Roquan Smith, we saw him progress. Those first couple of weeks that he played last year, you could tell he didn't know what he was supposed to do. He was a little bit slow, but you could see the talent there in trying to catch up to guys. You could see the talent, you could see the speed. And then by the end of the year, he almost led the Bears in tackles by the end of the year. And now with a full training camp under his belt, dang, you saw what he could do. And he's like a missile. I want to see him get the opportunity to really rush the passer on blitzes. Yes. Because I think that guy is going to wreak havoc if he's allowed to blitz, because he's so fast and he's so strong. He's just going to be able to wreak havoc. And on any type of stretch run, watching that guy just slice through the offensive line and make the play is great. When you finally look at it, the Bears, Aaron Rodgers rushed for 8 yards, but the rest of the running backs had 39 combined yards rushing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Says a lot.
On a game that 13 total points were scored, they gave up 39 yards rushing. Williams had 5 carries for 0 yards. And Jones had 13 carries for 39 yards.
We saw it last
year. So that ends up.
We saw this last year, how good they are at stopping that.
Yeah. And so 18 carries for 39 yards. And that just shows that there's absolutely no drop off on this defense. And if the offense could just muster anything, we should be able to take care of business with Denver. We really should.
And it's one of those games where if your defense plays as it is, you don't need Trubisky to light the world on fire. He's just got to be a hell lot better than he was this past week. And you want to use the run a lot more. This is a golden opportunity for David Montgomery to go off. But his coach has to let him.
You have to give him the opportunities. You have to. And
if he doesn't, I am going to hit my head with a frying pan repeatedly.
Bears fans, don't be fooled by what Denver does. I think they're playing tomorrow night? Tomorrow night. Their Monday night game. Don't be fooled by what they do, because they're playing a Raiders team that is so incredibly dysfunctional. It's like everybody now is like Lamar Jackson's coming out party. I'm not saying Lamar Jackson's going to be bad, but do not judge that guy by today, because RG3 came in after him and was 6 for 6 in passing.
Yeah.
That Dolphins team is epically bad, and this Raiders team is pretty darn bad.
And you know what?
And I know this is, not Bears related, but I really want to take a second to talk about this Antonio Brown situation.
Yeah, I did too.
This was the most premeditated thing I've ever seen. He had no...
I can't believe it's real.
He had no intention of playing for the Raiders.
No, no.
And he created this helmet issue.
No, it didn't matter how much money he was making.
He created this helmet issue. He's, you know, it's hard to fake the frostbite that he had on his feet, because I saw that gross pictures. But he definitely created a nightmare scenario. And then the way he went about it, you know, almost fighting Mike Mayock. And then I'm not a huge Gruden guy, but that phone call that he posted, like, John Gruden didn't say anything bad. He was giving him every opportunity to clean slate. Just come back and play football. Mm-hmm. Come back and play football.
Yep.
He didn't cuss him out. He didn't belittle him. John Gruden actually took the high ground there, and Antonio Brown just was like, hey, you said one small thing I didn't like. I'm more than a football player. He's not saying you're not. He's saying you're a good football player, and that's what your job is. Do your job. You get paid a lot of money to do other things when you're not playing football. And he forced his way out, and now he cost himself a ton of money, going from $50 million to max 15. That's a huge chunk of money. But he's going to, barring some catastrophic injury, he's going to win a Super Bowl.
I don't think he cares about money at all. He wanted to play for the Patriots. He wanted a chance at a ring. He didn't want to be in Oakland. I mean, you saw the video of his reaction of when he was cut. You saw that. Could it not be more obvious?
Yes, I'm free.
It could not be more obvious that this was planned out. He was literally George Costanza trying to get fired from the New York Yankees.
He had somebody there taping the phone call and his reaction to it.
Yes. Yeah. How is this not in any way some sort of plan?
It's so ridiculous. But you know what? If the NFL is going to allow it, it's going to keep happening.
Yep. Nothing's going to happen. Absolutely nothing's going to happen. And you remember, the Patriots wanted him. They wanted him.
Yeah, but they weren't going to trade anything for him.
No. This was...
And the Steelers weren't going to trade with the Patriots.
No, of course not. Of course not.
And instead of getting something, giving up something, they got him, Antonio Brown, for nothing. They got him for a cheaper amount of money, and they didn't have to give up any draft picks.
The Oakland Raiders lost assets for nothing.
Literally. They gave a second and a fifth, or a third and a fifth or something. They just gave them away for absolutely nothing. And if they don't win their grievance, they're going to have like $20 million of dead money on the books. So, which is good for the Bears, because the Bears get the Raiders' second round pick this year.
He. You know what else is great? And what else proves the point that this was all planned out? Antonio Brown on Instagram, on social media, had that image ready to post. You think he just photoshopped that in 2 seconds?
It's unreal. But you know what? The NFL's not going to do anything about it. And, you know, it's all we can hope for is Tom Brady to break his leg.
It's not happening.
No, he just keeps going.
This game already, I have the game on. I have the Steelers-Patriots game on right now, right next to me. And they're going to have Antonio Brown and Flash Gordon playing together with Tom Brady.
Tom Brady to Antonio Brown is just going to make the rest of the league look stupid.
It right now, to me, it just screams that he's going to have another ring on his hand. The one that's not covered.
It's so incredibly frustrating.
But you know what?
It's like, can this dynasty end already? Can it just end? Can we go back to the Patriots just being a bum team?
And there have been several points in the Tom Brady saga where we thought the dynasty was over. I think it was before they won in 14. It was like mid-season. They got blown out in Kansas City, and everyone was writing Tom Brady off. Everyone said it was done, and then they went on to win the Super Bowl.
It's unreal, and I'm just the guy is still throwing like a 25-year-old. So
he just threw a dart again. It's incredible.
Yeah, he's gonna play at least 3 more years after this one.
And how old is he now?
39.
I think he's in his 40s.
Let's see. Tom Brady.
And now all NBC is doing is flashing the Antonio Brown Photoshop/art pics of him arriving in New England with Bill Belichick.
He turned 42 last month.
Yep. After he just won another Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's unreal. Like, when is Father Time going to catch up to this guy? Because it always does.
Father Time catches up to everybody except Tom Brady.
That's because he doesn't eat strawberries because of their inflammatory effects. If you don't eat strawberries, there's something wrong with you. I don't care how many Super Bowls you, it's not worth not being able to eat a strawberry.
I love strawberries.
Have you eaten a strawberry? They're delicious.
Especially
even the store-bought ones. Red. Yeah. Even the gross store-bought ones. Like if you grow your own strawberries and you eat them, it is a magical thing. It's like, I don't know.
Do you grow your own strawberries?
Yeah, I do. I grow my own strawberries.
Dude. When I go to your house, I'm just going to be in the back just picking them off one by one.
They're small. They're very small. They're about the size of grapes, but man, are they delicious.
You should make strawberry Kool-Aid.
I'm going to make strawberry jungle juice for the next game. That's what I need.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, I mean, back to the Bears, it's, I'm not writing the season off, and I'm not saying, oh, man, they're done. I'm not saying they're the 2018 Jaguars. I'm not saying any of that. Just saying that this was a dog turd performance, and they all know it. They all know what we have to do. They have the talent to be able to do something else. It's just going to be a rough first few weeks. It really is. Because they've got, I mean, they really do need to win this game against the Broncos.
Yeah, you do.
Because the schedule just kind of, it gets rough right away. Is you've got that game, then you got the Redskins, which they got trounced by the Eagles. But then you get the Vikings.
Who looks rejuvenated today. Who
looked great today. Then you have the Raiders, which you should be. But then you get your bye week. Then the Saints, Chargers, Eagles.
Yep. And then 2 weeks from that, the Rams.
Mm-hmm. And then you get then 3 weeks after that, the Cowboys. Then the Packers again. Then the Chiefs. Then the Vikings.
This schedule is tough.
So you end the season.
Every single game you can take. Yep,
you end the season. Cowboys, Packers, Chiefs, Vikings.
Yep. Wonderful.
So, I mean, you really do have to take advantage of these games. So you've got to beat these Broncos. You've got to beat the Redskins. You don't. It's one thing if you started the season with these really, really tough opponents and you struggled, and then you're like, you got into your groove when you're playing the bad opponents and just trounced all of them. But you've got some easy opponents in the first part of the season, and that's your best chance of stockpiling wins. You've got to take them while you can. You had the Green Bay Packers in your grasp,
yep,
and you gave it up. And now you have, I mean, these, if you have any hopes of winning this division, you'd better go into Denver, beat the Broncos. You better beat the Redskins. Better beat the Raiders. You have to win those three games, because you can't rely on a ton of wins in another game against the Packers, two against the Vikings, the Saints, Chargers, Eagles, Cowboys, Rams, Chiefs. You can't count on a ton of wins there. Even if you're a good team, those are all good teams too.
Yeah, and you know, again, I'm not writing off the season either by any means. It's week one, but I also don't like hearing all the, well, they lost week one against Green Bay last year. Last year, you had a much easier schedule to manage. It was much different, because the next five games after that, you got to play like the Jets and the Buccaneers and the Seahawks. So the Seahawks ended up being a really good team, but at the time they didn't look like much. But you get my point. The next four or five games after that opening week were very winnable. This, yeah, you should beat the Broncos. Hopefully you really should beat the Redskins, and you should beat the Raiders, but you don't get much break after that.
No, you really, really don't. You know, the Lions tied today. I don't know if you saw that.
I did. I was watching when we started the show, and unfortunately for the Bears, I don't remember who it was on the Cardinals, dropped an easy interception with like 5 seconds to go in overtime that would have probably won the game for the Cardinals. But
there was 6 seconds left, and if he would have caught it, they would just lined up and kicked the field goal there and won the game.
Yep.
And now is, for the ease of math, this is annoying. Tie games in football make it so annoying. Didn't the Vikings tie last year?
Yes.
And it was so annoying at the end, because trying to figure out winning the division, you're like, there's a tie. What happens with a tie?
You want my personal opinion on ties?
They should both lose.
Yes, I agree. They should both lose. If you're going to have ties, they should count as losses. Now, I don't think you should necessarily have a tie. You should determine a winner and a loser. But if you're going to have ties, you're pretty much half rewarding. And that doesn't make any sense. It's either you win or you don't win.
Agreed. I'm fully with you. But the Bears have to get better. And it starts with Matt Nagy. That game plan better be better. You should be prepared to play, even if Trey Burton is not there, because you cannot count on one guy to be there 16 games. We need Trey Burton to put his big boy pants on and come out and play. We need Mitch Trubisky to make better decisions and quicker decisions. We need the offensive line to block better. And we need the wide receivers to get better separation, not drop the ball. And we need to run the ball more.
Mm.
And we just need defense to do what they've done the last year.
Yeah, I mean, they just have to keep playing like they've been playing. But boy, does the offense need to really, really make some changes. And yeah, I mean, that's the other thing is, Allen Robinson made some fantastic catches. He looked really good. It just, you know, the other targets, while Mitch wasn't good, not making good throws, they didn't create much separation. It seemed like they were constantly being covered by a Packer. There was always somebody there. There was nobody absolutely wide open down the field.
No. They were playing close to the line of scrimmage. They were playing to stop the run. And then when they saw that the run wasn't happening, they dropped back into coverage and made it tough. And that's part of what you need Trey Burton to come back with, because you need him there to create a mismatch and create better space. It's going to help. They're going to have to bring a safety down and it's going to help create open guys downfield. They need him to come back and they need him to play good. And that's part of that offense getting better. You need all your guys there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. If you're truly going to be the coach that you say you are, then spread out the offense, because that's not what happened.
No, and don't stop being cute. If it's 3rd and 1, don't pull some bullshit play. Is play either do a, if you're going to pass, if you really don't think you're going to run, is run some sort of quick slant where the slot receiver just cuts inside hard between the linebackers and the defensive linemen, and have it be a quick throw where the defensive player can't make a play without pass interference and get the play first down. If you need to pass, that's what you need to do. And otherwise, run the ball and don't make it be a slow developing play. Is quick handoff, get the first down, move the chains. Don't do it with a running back or a wide receiver. Do it with a running back.
That'd be nice.
And, you know, the good thing is Denver's is playing tomorrow night. So they're going to be playing with short rest. But the bad news is you have no game film on them. So you have less, I mean, you'll have week 1 to look at, but it's going to be, you know, just a couple days before you head out to Denver.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Wasn't the last time they were in Denver that stupid Tim Tebow game?
Probably.
I think it was.
Stupid Tim Tebow.
I will never forget. That, I think, to me, was the low point of the 2011 season.
I can't go into work next Monday feeling like I did going into work on Friday.
I am right there with you. I couldn't stop thinking about it.
I was not in a good mood at all.
Yep.
And it carried over into the weekend. One of the people I have to deal with on a regular basis, he's a Packers fan. And the first thing he sent me on Instant Messenger was just said 1-0. And I was just like, can't deal with you today. And I blocked him. Like, I can't deal with you today. I'm like, I don't need to talk to you today. I'm not going to talk to you today.
Yeah.
I feel a little better. This was cathartic.
Yeah, it let out some frustration. It definitely did. Would have been nice if other teams in the NFC North lost, but oh well.
The one thing I know this is really early to say this, but at the end of this season, the Bears have to make a decision on what they're going to do with Mitch Trubisky.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to extend him? Are they going to, because this is year 3, he was a first round pick. So you have the option to pick up his 5th year of his contract, his rookie contract, but you have to make that decision after the 3rd season. So this is season 3. So after the season, you either have to decide you're picking up the 5th year of his contract. And I'm imagining that's going to be like almost $20 million. Or are you going to sign him to an extension? And is he going to, by that time, prove to you that he's the guy? And I know we saw a lot of good things last year, and I know he was a Pro Bowl alternate. And we saw some really good things. I mean, the second half of that Eagles game, we saw some really good things out of him. But we've also seen some really bad things. And are we going to see enough from him for the Bears to decide to commit to him? Because if you commit to a guy the way these quarterback contracts are going, you are handcuffing yourself if he's not the guy. Look at the contract that Carson Wentz got. Look at the contract Russell Wilson got. hear the numbers that are being bandied around of what Dak Prescott is going to get. And if
Dak freaking Prescott.
So if you have to throw that kind of money, $30 million a year to Mitch Trubisky, he better be the guy. You can't handcuff yourself to him for that kind of money if he's not the guy. So if you're the Bears, you got a lot. You've got to make him show you that he can win these games, because if not, you better start thinking of what you're going to do. And I'm not saying he's not the guy. He might come out and just continue on from, you know, where he was improving on last year. And last year was a pretty decent year, but, you know, and this might've been the fluke game this week one. But if he has a couple of real clunkers and doesn't look lights out the rest of the time, that is going to be a scary thought, because you have to decide, are you committed to this guy or are you moving another direction? That's a scary decision to make with a second overall pick.
Well, all I can say right now is he's got 15 more games to show it. So show it.
I hope he has a lot more than that. I hope he's got playoffs and a Super Bowl. And I mean, I'm more than happy to pay the guy. If he comes out and he wins the Super Bowl and he throws for 350 yards in the Super Bowl and three touchdowns, you know what? I'm going to be the first one lining up to say, pay that man. Pay that man. But I'm also done being an apologist for him. I want to see him come out there and say, haters be damned, and prove them all wrong. Until he does that, I'm not going to be a hater. I'm also not going to be an apologist. I'm just going to be a guy that describes how he played that game. And this game against Packers, he stunk.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not drinking the Mitch Kool-Aid. I'm also not eating a meatball sandwich. It's something that I'm going to be looking at and saying, just show me. Show me what you can do. I am neither going to go around and say why I think he's going to be great. I am neither going to sit around and say he's done, he's a bust, move on at this moment right now. I need to see one more season.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not using the B word at all. And I know there'll be people jumping down my throat if they think I am. And I'm absolutely not. I'm just really disappointed in that first game of what they did. Just absolutely, with all the excitement. I mean, I live in the city, and driving around the city, so many people decked out in their Bears gear. The Cubs, theoretically,
it was that the office at work were wearing it.
Theoretically, the Cubs are in a playoff race, and everybody is going, I'm wearing my Bears gear. That's the excitement that there was around. And we just saw our worst. I'm not saying our worst nightmare, because that would have been like Khalil Mack, you know, tearing an ACL or something. Is non-injury worst case scenario is what we saw.
You know, this may sound very controversial, but I almost felt worse after this game than the Green Bay opener last year. I mean, that was much more of a gut-wrenching loss, but that was also week one of Matt Nagy's head coaching career. It was the first time Mitch Trubisky started an opening night. It was the first game with Khalil Mack. It was the first game for a lot of things, and they felt secure that they could win it, and they took their foot off the gas pedal, and it seemed like a learning curve for a very, very young team. It still stunk, but I mean, this is where you were more hyped about the Bears than you have been in, what, at least 5 years longer, maybe since that 2006 season when you made it to the Super Bowl. The hype was unbelievable, and to come out like that, for the team and the fans to toot their horns and to come out like that, it's really not a good look. It's really, really not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so they had better come out and kick Denver's ass. before the rest of us start going out and spending hard-earned money on new Kool-Aid spoons.
Yeah. Or at least taking time to carve them. Because I feel like that's what you do in the backyard. Just carve.
You whittle it. You got a whittling knife and you whittle yourself a Kool-Aid spoon. Should we shift gears here and talk about the frustration that is the Chicago Cubs?
I suppose.
So we had the Milwaukee Brewers basically on life support for their playoff hopes. We could have just stepped on their throats and suffocated their playoff lives and put them out of their misery and just focused on let's chase down the Cardinals.
Yep.
And you came out the first game and you won. And then you just the wheels came off.
Just like the last series at Wrigley with them. You win the first game and then the wheels come.
It's just absolutely really frustrating to watch them let a team that they let back into this last year, letting them back into it this year. When you're already chasing down the Cardinals, you can't do what they're doing against Milwaukee. You just can't do it.
If you want my personal opinion as we stand right now, it's either wild card or miss the postseason. I think the division race is over.
I don't want to believe that, but I have no reason to think otherwise. The Cardinals are playing really good baseball, and the Cubs are struggling. And now you've got Chris Bryant with a sore knee. You've got Addison Russell with whatever brain cells he had broken. You've got Javi Baez with a broken thumb.
Craig Kimbrell.
Craig Kimbrell's on the... Yep. And it's...
Contreras can't play every day with his hamstring. Rizzo's right. Had his back issues.
And you have John Lester throwing another stinker.
Yeah, I'm going to get into John Lester in a minute, but one last thing... I mean, not one last thing, but one next thing I should say that I want to talk about this game today... is what it showed me is that this was probably the most important game of the season. Obviously, everyone from now is, but the game today was you need to win or else you're going to be 4.5 back of the Cardinals. And look, the reason why I think this division race is over is because you have 3 weeks left. The Cardinals' magic number to clinch the division is 16. If you just do the math, it shows that the Cubs would probably have to go at least 6-1 against the Cardinals and win every series from here on out to have a chance. You have to pull what Milwaukee pulled last year. And I don't see it.
Yeah, you've got what? You've got what? 20 games left,
give or take. Yeah, either 20 or 21.
I think it's 20. You've got 20 games left to make up 4.5. And not saying it's not doable, just saying it's really unlikely, because you've got what, 7 against the Cardinals left in that 20.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. You have to absolutely manhandle. You have to manhandle St. Louis, and
before you get there, you have to beat up on the San Diego Padres, the Pirates, and the Reds,
and they're teams that you've had struggles against, and
especially Cincinnati.
But I mean, in the last couple of years, they've struggled against bad Padres teams. Mm-hmm. So you have to come out there and play fantastic baseball. So you're looking at, out of those 20 games, let's see. So you got to win at least five against them. So minus those 15. You're going to have to go at least.
Telling you, the math.
You're
going
to have to go at
good.
Least 14-6. At least.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. To have a shot.
And that's really good winning percentage. So you have to win at least 70% of your games in the last 20 games.
And here's the thing. Had the Cubs taken 3 of 4 in Milwaukee, this is a totally different story. Not only are the Brewers buried, but you're within 2 games of the Cardinals. And you look at that and say, you're right there within striking distance. But 4.5 with this many games to go, it's not like 2017 where they were, 5 behind the Brewers at the All-Star break, but you still had 2.5 months to go. That's not the case here. That is not the case.
Yeah, and you look at the wild card, and sure, they've got that second wild card right now, but now you suddenly look at the standings, and Arizona's 1.5 games behind you. Milwaukee's...
The team that sold their best player is right behind you in the wild card race. Can we talk about how asinine that is?
The team that you let right back into this is only 2 games behind you. Philadelphia is only 2 games behind you. And the Mets are 4 behind you, but I'm pretty much writing them off.
Yeah, it's gonna take a lot for them to get in.
And, you know, I'm surprised that they are doing as good as they are, because I thought they were going to be bad, especially when they, just some of the moves that they've made. And then that front office is ridiculous. But I'm going to write them off, because to leapfrog 4 teams in 20 games and you're 4 games behind, that's
pretty
unlikely. So I'm gonna, you know, write them off. So it's a 4-team race. Washington's pretty much all but got that first wild card locked up. So it's that last wild card is between the Cubs, Diamondbacks, Brewers, and Philadelphia. And you should have already cemented this with stomping out Milwaukee, and you couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't do it.
Yep. Nope. That game last night, that 3-2 loss, just disgusting. But so predictable.
Right? Absolutely.
I mean, to me, just the writing is on the wall. They're either going to get pummeled in the wild card game, or they're going to miss the playoffs. And even if you do squeak out the wild card game, you really think you're going to beat LA in a 5-game series? I highly doubt it.
No.
I highly, highly doubt it.
Especially if you make this wild card, you're going to have to beat a really, really good Washington team in Washington.
With Max Scherzer on the mound.
Yes. And whoever you put out there for that game, is they're not going to be able to start the series against the Dodgers. And the Dodgers are so far in advance and ahead of everybody else, is they're going to start resting their guys, and they're going to line up their rotation to the way they want it. And so you are just facing all of their top starters back to back to back. And they're just preparing now. They're just getting ready. And that's the beauty.
It was us in 2016.
Yes. It's when you are that far ahead, you can start gearing up for the sprint that's the playoffs in baseball. And the Cubs are just fighting for their lives. So if you can beat Max Scherzer at home in a 1-game series, then you've got to win 3 of 5 against the Dodgers when you've only got two games at home. So you have to win a road game.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really unlikely. I mean, the good news is if you're able to beat the Max Scherzer and the Washington Nationals on the road in a one game series, and you're able to take 3 of 5 against the Dodgers, the National League Division Series should be much easier.
Well, that's going to take a lot of good things to happen, I think.
Absolutely. I'm just in a fairy tale land. But you're not set up to do this. It's becoming less and less likely.
Every passing day when there's a new injury or there's some stupid loss, some man makes some stupid, lame excuse. I'm sick of it, man. I'm sick of the lame excuses. I really am. Did the Blackhawks make these excuses when they were in the middle of their cup runs?
No.
No, they didn't.
Joel Quenneville just chewed aspirin like they were Tic Tacs.
Yeah.
And he was coaching.
They went out and won.
He was coaching with an ulcer in the hospital.
Yeah.
And Joe Maddon, I don't think he comes back. I don't think
he's gone.
Even if they make some miracle run and win the World Series, I don't think he comes back.
No. And look, I will always be indebted to Joe Maddon for what he did here. His legacy as the World Series winning manager should never be tarnished. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people will see it that way. In the long run, I would never, ever imagine before 2016 that the manager who wins a World Series with the Cubs would ever have their legacy tarnished from disappointment. I mean, come on, that sounds asinine, right? But the way things are going and the way fans are reacting to Joe Maddon would seem that way. Maybe it's just a small percentage of the fan base, but you know, unfortunately, I see this just being an ugly ending for his tenure. When he won the World Series in 2016, and I thought that the future was going to be much brighter than it is now, I thought it was going to be like, okay, maybe he'll win another World Series and he'll just ride off into the sunset. But now it feels like he is being kind of just given the heave-ho. Just the door has been opened by Theo, and he's kind of that guy who's hosting a party who's trying to get that one last guest to leave by giving subtle reminders with the door standing by the door open. You know what I mean? That's what
tapping
it feels
his watch.
Like. Yeah, tapping his watch and kind of looking at it and saying, you know, I'm kind of tired. Maybe going to bed sooner than I thought tonight. And it's that kind of thing. And, you know, I am forever indebted to it, but boy, to me, the writing is on the wall. It really is. Yeah.
I don't think there's any way he comes back. And another scary thought I just had is if you're able to make the wild card and you face the Max Scherzer, is you're not even going to be able to line up who you want to pitch in that game because you're going to be fighting all the way to the end,
right,
to win the wild card. So, you know, who knows who's going to be taking the mound that game.
Yep.
And if you did have your pick right now, I know the guy that I would put on the mound. Who would you put on the mound?
Well,
get Max Scherzer one game to make, you know, to win the actual make the playoffs.
May look at me crazy, but I'd consider Darvish right now.
That's who I would pick. He's pitching great.
If this was at home, it would be Kyle Hendricks, hands down. There wouldn't be a question. But Kyle Hendricks has struggled on the road.
And after that is, I don't know what's your starting rotation for the playoffs if you're able to win that game. I mean, these are a lot of ifs. These are huge, giant, 10-story high letters if, is who do you trust? You have to throw somebody out there. I mean, you Darvish is looking good.
The guy I normally trusted the most has been awful since coming back since injury. So scratch Cole Hamels off right now.
Scratch off Cole Hamels. I don't trust John Lester at this point. And so you've got Quintana, you've got Darvish, and you've got Hendricks.
You know, Quintana and Darvish right now might be the guys you trust the most. I mean, you can throw Kyle Hendricks in there, but again, the road home numbers are pretty severe. And the other thing about you, Darvish, is that he has been nails on the road. If you look at those road numbers, you know, I could try to pull them up, but he has been better on the road than home. And you don't even need numbers to back that up. You just look at the performances.
And so who's the guy that you trust after that? And who of the guys that have like historic postseason numbers, which one of those two guys do you say, I'm leaving you off? And which one do you hand the ball to? Because one of them's got to get the ball handed to him. And I would be shocked if the way things have been the last month or two is that you can keep the two of them over the other three starters.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that, too. You got to remember, matchups are a big thing, especially with Joe Maddon. So that's got to be taken into account, depending on who you're playing and depending who's up pitching that night for the other team.
You're right. And so it's...
Here we go. You just to make a real quick point here, you Darvish, he's pitched 87 and a third innings on the road as opposed to 70 at home. On the road, he's got a 3.30 ERA, a whip of 1.03, strikeouts per nine of 10.9, and 106 strikeouts total. 3.30 ERA on the road, 15 starts.
Especially considering where he started at the beginning of the season. That's really good.
Another thing I'd like to point out is on the road, batters are hitting .203 against him with an OBP of .278.
I like those. I like those numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mentioned the strikeouts, obviously. The slugging against at Wrigley Field, it's .468. On the road, it's .377.
That's great. What are his numbers at Wrigley? Full numbers.
So full numbers at Wrigley, a 5.14 ERA, a whip of 1.3 if you round up. Strikeouts per nine, 10.8, so pretty much the same. The batting average against is .230. OBP is .307, which those two numbers right there are not bad by any means. But if you compare them to the road numbers, you compare a .307 OBP to a .278. It's a pretty big difference.
It's a big difference. With the way this offense has been anemic, it's even more important.
Absolutely. And if you're into OPS plus, OPS plus against at home is 105. On the road, it's 70. That is a huge difference.
Man, I didn't realize the stark difference there. And it's pretty
dramatic.
And I said a minute ago that considering the poor start he had, that the 3.30 ERA was pretty darn good. And then you compare it to home, what is it, 5.14. That is a huge difference. That's like, that's a huge difference. It's almost two runs. And, that's showing you how good he's been on the road, because he's been very good in the last couple of months. And he's only been able to bring that home ERA down a little bit, and he's just crushing it on the road.
And he's had some very good starts at Wrigley in the second half. I mean, his overall ERA in the second half is .269 in 60 innings pitched. The whip is below one. The strikeouts per nine are above 10. Really good body work. I think that home ERA would be a little lower if it wasn't for that one against the Giants. But in the first half, his home ERA was really bad.
So it's a scary, it's scary to think about. I mean, you know, if you would have told me just the numbers of what we've had since 2015 to now, 10 years ago, you said in 10 years, you're going to have a World Series victory. You're going to have a couple of National League Championship Series, you know, appearances. You'll have made the playoffs all these years. I'd have been like, I'll take that. I'll take that any day. But now that we're in this window and we know what talent we have and the resources that we have, it's actually really frustrating to think that we haven't done more.
I would have at least liked to have seen another run to the World Series. I know there have only been two full seasons since the World Series, and the Dodgers are just better all around. But heck, even last year, if they would have won the division last year, gotten back to the NLCS, and had a good competitive NLCS against the Dodgers, win or lose, I wouldn't feel quite as bad right now. I'd still feel pretty dang bummed out and disappointed. But after last year, after the way it happened, this feels a lot worse.
Absolutely. It feels it, this last season and what you've had so far this season, just putting a damper on this whole era.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it is. That's so true.
And, you know, I don't know how you fix this. I don't know what you do. Because you're starting now to come to the period where you're going to have to start paying guys. And you're going to have to find young players that play well to even out these big contracts. And you don't have those guys in the minors.
It's a pickle. I mean, I wrote the other day an article about the whole thing, you know, the whole trade Chris Bryant thing. The way I wrote the article was basically me saying, really think about wanting to trade Chris Bryant before you just declare you want to and look at the logistics of it. But at the same time, I didn't 100% close the door on the idea, if you read it. Does that make sense?
I'm always of the mind that the team that gave away the best player in a package probably lost the trade.
Sure.
But it comes down to this. Do you think you can re-sign him, number one? If you don't think you can re-sign him, then it makes the possibility and the reality of trading him something that's not only a realistic thing, but also can make sense. Two is, even if you do think you can sign him, and you're going to probably pay him some astronomical amount of money, you know, $30 million a year, what is your team going to look like
right
while he's here? Are you going to be one of those teams that has one really good hitter and then nothing else? Are you going to be the Reds with Joey Votto? Is that what you're going to be? If that's the case, is it worth signing him? Or can you just take the parts that you have and rebuild and try to start from scratch?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not one advocating necessarily for trading Chris Bryant, but I think it's one of those things where the front office, if they evaluate the situation and they feel like they can really shake things up by doing it, than I would trust in the front office knowing what they're doing. I mean, you look at it this way, you can look at it and say, in one perspective, you know, what seems logical, you know what you have in Chris Bryant. You know you have a really damn good player in Chris Bryant, and it's very risky to trade him away for unknowns. On the other side, what you said, you know, one of the reasons being, hey, you're going to pay him all this money and have a bunch of mediocre players around him, potentially, or could you save a lot of money, spread the wealth around, and get the materials you can really shake things up with? If there's one concern I truly have about Chris Bryant, these nagging injuries are really building up.
For a young guy.
For a young guy.
Shoulder, back, knee. Those are real nagging injuries that shorten careers.
I'd be lying if I said that didn't frighten me a little bit.
And again, I am not suggesting that trading him is the right thing.
Right, neither am I.
But remember when the Cubs started the rebuild? Is they had nothing.
Zilch.
They just started from scratch. It was, the cupboards were bare. When the White Sox started their rebuild, they jump-started it with trading Quintana and trading Chris Sale.
And Adam Eaton.
And Adam Eaton. And that really jump-started the entire rebuild. And so if you feel that you're really going to hamstring yourself by signing Baez and Bryant and then having to go out and get another pitcher to replace Cole Hamels and probably a John Lester, and you're going to have to probably give a new contract to Anthony Rizzo.
That's another question too about Anthony Rizzo. Does he get another contract?
I don't know.
Numbers wise, I want to be a Cub as long as he can. But the one area of concern, the back problem.
Big man with a bad back. Big man with a bad back.
That is a concern. Wilson Contreras, he's young, but those hamstring issues, he's had multiple hamstring injuries. Now, he may be the type of guy who, in a few years, becomes a full-time outfielder. Maybe that's what happens. Or maybe he becomes a first baseman. He may not be a catcher for the long run.
I don't think he will be. So if you're the Cubs and you go, you know what? We don't think we can sign these guys and probably create like an inflated sense of the window, a false extension of the window, but where we can compete and we can play well and we can win a bunch of games, but we're not a threat to win the World Series. Is that worth it? Because then at the end of that, when these guys are done, you still have an empty farm system and you have no guys. Is that what you want? Or is it better to just hypotheticals, is it better to say, let's trade a Chris Bryant in his prime, let's trade a Javi Baez in his prime, let's sell the pieces and start from scratch again in 3 years? And unlike the White Sox, we've got $250 million we can spend.
Right.
And so White Sox are like, well, we're comfortable spending $40 million, but the Cubs could spend $250 and just go hog wild with all young guys and then just, you know, be able to bolster the roster with like that with free agency. I'm not saying that's the right thing. This is a tough decision. This is why Jed and Theo get paid a lot of money to make these tough decisions.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, here's the thing. We keep going back and forth between what we think the Cubs should do. And all this does is prove how complicated this whole future is for this team. I don't have a proposed solution. In years past, you looked at the holes and say, okay, you could go after this guy, you could go after this guy, you could plug it with this guy. It's a little different going forward. It's a combination of the number of holes on the team, it's a combination of the uncertain futures of some of these guys, and the money.
Right. So I don't know what the right answer is, and you know, we don't, this doesn't have to be decided anytime, you know, in the next few weeks or even a few months, but I'm sure this is all, these are all things that, that the front office is thinking about. And you know, what's going to complicate the matters? Where do the Cubs start broadcasting next year?
Oh, the whole marquee sports thing that we don't really know much about. Yeah.
Do you really want to start the early years of your brand new television network with selling all your best players and rebuilding?
Probably not.
No, I think that complicates matters because they're going to have ownership pressure saying, hey, whoa, we can't sell this for a premium if we're not a premium team.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's complicated. That's all I gotta say. There's no easy solution to this.
No. And I mean, back to the matter at hand is, you're right. I don't see any realistic way of winning this division. They've had so many ample opportunities to win this division, and they have not taken any of them. I honestly look at this and go, it is, you're right. It is that second wild card or bust. And there are a lot of teams right on your ass. And there's, you're coming up on the point where there's zero margin for error, because regardless, those seven games against the Cardinals, they want to win all seven from you.
Oh, of course. Of course.
They want to win all seven, and you're going to have to, you're going to have to win at least half of those to probably take the second wild card spot.
Yeah.
Being a Chicago sports fan is, it's a frustrating time right now. I mean, it could be worse. You could have a bunch of shitty teams like New York. But we know we have a team that, an NFL team that should be very good. We've got a baseball team that is in a wild card spot to win a, you know, make it to the playoffs, but the expectations are much higher than the reality of where they're sitting.
It's like, it can't just be fully good or fully bad. It's got to be as frustrating as possible.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating. And the Cubs, you know, they got to go tomorrow all the way to San Diego, and they got to play a game in San Diego, and it starts at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah. The next three start at 9 o'clock at night.
All three start at 9 o'clock at night, 9:10.
The next three. The last one is in the afternoon, but the next three.
There's nothing worse than having to stay up and watch these games that late. I'm old, I'm tired, and I just want to go to bed. And, you know, if they're...
I'm not staying up for it's 6:45. I'm not staying up for
that. Yeah, I'm going to watch the beginnings, and then I'm going to get up in the morning and go, did the Cubs win?
And then you're going to see they lost 5-1, and you're going to be more upset.
Yeah, and it's going to be, they lost 5-1, Castellanos hit a solo home run, and, you know, the starting pitcher pitched well, but the bullpen came up and gave 5 runs up in the 8th.
Oh, and then Addison Russell airmailed it over Rizzo's head, and then he said, it's probably a good thing I did so I can learn in the middle of a pennant race.
I'm glad you said that. That was absolutely annoying.
Do you really expect us to take you seriously when you're saying that?
I hate him. He's not a good football player, and he's not a good person. Can we not bring him back next year?
Please, no. There's no reason to. No, we're going to have Nico Horner next year. So, I
want no part of Addison Russell.
There should be no reason to. He's not good at all. The only reason he hasn't been cut is because Theo realized he's screwed up by not getting any depth on the team.
So infuriating. So infuriating.
You had to prove a point instead of doing what's best for your team. And it's backfiring on you. Frankly, they deserve it. If you ask my opinion, that loss last night was fully deserved. Fully deserved.
Agreed.
It feels like karma. You could have had a Jose Iglesias who can hit decently and field very well for nothing. You could have paid pennies for him. You could have given him a minor league deal. But instead, you had to prove a point instead of worrying about the well-being of your team. A point that really sends a wrong message over a good one. God, that makes me so angry. You did this to yourselves. God.
And one thing, I'm totally flipping back to an old subject, but Eddie Pinheiro is one for one on field goals this season.
Woo!
And Adam Vinatieri is 1-for-3 and 1-for-1 out of 2 for extra points.
Adam Vinatieri's a legend, but I think we're seeing the end.
Yeah, so, and I'm mad that the Bears went for it on 4th down rather than let Eddie Pinheiro kick a 50-yard field goal or a 48-yard field goal.
Yeah, you know, for me in that situation, I was not fully opposed to going for it. I wouldn't have, you know, I probably would have kicked the field goal if I were Nagy. But when he was lining up to go for it, I wasn't upset about it. I was upset about the way they tried to do it. But going for it, to me, wasn't the worst idea in the world, even though I probably said, but that's me.
I just want a better week next week.
Yeah. Hopefully it's one of those weeks where it's like, okay, this week sucked so much that it'll be better next week.
It can't suck worse. It can't suck worse.
Are you sure about that? Don't say that.
I don't want it to suck. I just want a good, yeah. Knock on my broken wooden spoon.
You are such, oh my God. If it's worse, I hope you stick your head in literal bug juice.
I'm going to I'm going to give myself a swirly if it is worse. I'm just going to stick my head in a porta potty and deal with the consequences.
Before you stick your head in it, you're going to empty a Kool-Aid packet in it and then stick your head in it.
And with my broken wooden spoon that I've duct taped back together, I'm going to swirl it in and throw some ice cubes in there. Clink, 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 clink. All right, I'm ready now.
If you have your wooden spoon taped together, it's going to look like Ron Weasley's wand from Chamber of Secrets.
We threw a Chamber of Secrets reference in this show. So in this episode, we've used the word cathartic and we've thrown in a Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets reference.
I got to say, for being a really depressing show, this was a pretty good episode.
Absolutely. We also both broke our curses. You went to the Monday Cubs game. I went to the Tuesday Cubs game and they won both.
Yeah, that was nice.
So I don't know if that was us breaking the curse as much as Seattle is just terrible.
Maybe a little both.
I'll take it as we broke our curse.
Okay. That's fair.
And my stepdad, I brought him to the game and he goes, I think Wilson Contreras is going to hit a home run here. Boom. Next pitch. Wilson Contreras parked it about 10 feet from where we were.
That's awesome. And that was a laser too. That was an absolute bomb.
It was close enough where we stood up. We're like, is this going to come to us? And then, you know, we sat down cause we realized it was going to be over, but you know, people that we had watched get up and walk around and get beers and things were right there where the ball hit. So it was right there. It was pretty cool.
That is cool.
So is there anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think I've said my piece.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe, however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, the TuneIn app, Google Play. Follow us on social media at ShyFanPat1, at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com. Share this podcast with your friends that listen to Chicago sports. That's how we grow the show. And again, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the planes.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears!